Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
The GameStop rally was supposed to take on hedge funds. We'll look at how one of those funds became one of the biggest winners.
They started buying when shares were close to $10, and they sold when they were, close to $400.
Plus, today, we're expecting new data revealing more job losses. But where do things stand for people who are already unemployed?
The longer people are out of work, just the worse their job prospects are.
And a major settlement involving opioids and a well-known consulting firm. It's Thursday, February 4th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Consulting giant McKinsey has reached a $573 million settlement with many states over advice it gave to Purdue Pharma and other drug makers to aggressively market opioid painkillers. According to court records, McKinsey advised that Purdue target healthcare providers that wrote the highest volumes of OxyContin prescriptions and shift away from lower volume prescribers. The consulting firm stopped doing opioid-related work in 2019 and said its work for Purdue was intended to support the legal use of opioids and help patients with legitimate medical needs. The board of the online forum Parler has fired CEO John Mates amid a dispute about the future of the platform that's popular among conservatives. It was forced offline after the Capitol riot when big tech companies withdrew key support for the app. According to Mates, he had been working to adjust the moderation rules that would allow Parler to return to Google and Apple's app stores. The board is currently controlled by conservative political donor Rebecca Mercer. Representatives for Parler and Mercer couldn't be reached for comment on Mates' firing or the timing of Parler's relaunch. Turning to Washington and the latest on the GameStop frenzy, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is set to meet with top regulators today to discuss the many issues that have emerged. This initial meeting will include officials from the SEC and the Fed. According to former officials and analysts, the discussion is unlikely to reach any conclusions on whether the activity points to risks to financial stability or the need for regulatory changes. It wasn't just individual investors making a lot of money on GameStop's rally. In a Wall Street Journal exclusive, we're reporting one hedge fund in particular made a profit of nearly $700 million. Joining me now with more on how this came to be is markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. She is in London. Good morning, Caitlin.
Morning, Mark.
Caitlin, so much of the movement upward has been propelled by day traders, but some hedge fund managers actually bet on the stock rising.
Yeah, so you've had this narrative, especially on forums like Reddit's Wall Street Bets, that's come about of, all of the little guys, all of the day traders kind of taking on these hedge funds that are holistically betting that stocks like GameStop will wind up falling. But not everything is always as clear cut and black and white. And some hedge funds also took this contrarian view that maybe the market was being a little too beating up on GameStop. And so you actually had one hedge fund, SunVest, which actually started adding on shares of GameStop, at the end of last year, September, October. And that's turned into a profit of nearly $700 million for them because they started buying when shares were close to $10 and they sold when they were, close to $400.
And Caitlin, we've seen a lot of volatility with GameStop and others. What has performance been like this week?
Yeah, so performance for a lot of the so-called Robinhood stocks, the stocks that are very heavily favored by day traders, we've been seeing less strong moves this week than we did last week. We had shares of GameStop shooting up over 100% in a single day, and now trading is a little bit more range-bound between, maybe 5 and 20%. That is obviously still really, really high volatility, but it does show that maybe some of this rally is losing a little bit of steam or a little bit of momentum.
Caitlin Ostroff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
On today's earnings calendar, we'll be hearing from Ford, Clorox, and Merck, along with Peloton. Looking ahead, House Democrats have scheduled a vote today to remove Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene from the Education and Budget Committees. The decision comes after Republicans declined to punish Greene, a Trump loyalist who made comments embracing conspiracy theories and political violence. The House Minority Leader said he told her she must hold herself to a higher standard, adding she apologized for her comments. This move comes as Republicans voted to keep Representative Liz Cheney in a leadership role, despite her criticism of former President Donald Trump. In Italy, the former head of the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, is aiming to become the country's next prime minister. Italy's president tasked him with forming a government following the collapse of a coalition led by former Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte. The euro's future could once again hinge on how Draghi fares. Italy's debts are high, its growth is chronically low, and people who live there are increasingly frustrated. Just ahead, what to expect when weekly jobless claims are released today. Our conversation after the break.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. By empowering the brightest minds, GE Aerospace is reimagining engine design and advanced aircraft systems, developing hybrid electric engines and technologies compatible with alternative fuels like sustainable aviation fuel. GE Aerospace strives every day to invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
As we follow the economy's recovery, the employment picture always takes center stage. Today, we'll be getting data on weekly unemployment claims. Then on Friday, we'll get the broader month-long jobs report. Here with a look at what to expect, and to put it all in perspective, is the Wall Street Journal's Kate Davidson, part of our team covering the economy. Good morning, Kate.
Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Kate, I want to talk about the broader picture, but first let's talk about today's data, the weekly claims. Are economists expecting another drop?
Yeah, so the consensus forecast for new jobless claims this morning is to be a little bit down from last week. And last week we saw it was a little bit down from the week before. So that's a good sign. You know, we'll find out there's volatility in week-to-week claims and normal fluctuations. And right now there's a lot of attention from week to week, but it's normal to see these things go up and down. What's important is to kind of focus on the broader trend. Unfortunately, the trend is that these initial claims are still very high, but obviously it would be a good sign if they continue to creep down again.
Then on Friday, we get the monthly picture. What can this tell us about the economy that we don't necessarily get from these weekly numbers?
Sure. Well, obviously, it's a bigger snapshot of what was happening at the beginning of the year. And the hope and expectation is that we'll see that employers added jobs again. We saw a decline in new jobs. There were jobs lost in December, which ended a seven-month stretch of job creation. That was no doubt about it. It was a bad report. So I think that the expectation is hopefully there's been some turnaround. If we think back to December, there was this surge in cases. Remember, post-Thanksgiving, a big climb in virus cases all over the country. There are perhaps some signs that that ebbed a bit in January and that employers started adding jobs again. So that's what we'll be looking for. But obviously, there's a lot more beneath the surface there that can tell us, you know, where sort of the overall, more about the overall health of the labor market.
Well, let's look at the broader context. We've seen job losses, then a rebound and some fluctuations here and there. What does this data tell us that may not be apparent at first glance?
Right. Well, I think that the most important number that if you're an economist digging deeper into the report is to look at the long-term unemployment picture. You know, it's been a while since we started seeing these initial waves of layoffs from the pandemic last spring. And we know, of course, there was a big burst of rehiring over the summer, and that's sort of slowly tapered off through the fall. All these people who did go back to work when things initially reopened. But what we're seeing now is there are many, many people, about 10 million million people who are still out of work, 10 million jobs that have not come back yet. And that's a bigger hole than we saw during the entire Great Recession. So it's pretty massive. And the reason that that is concerning, that so many people have been out of work for a long time, is we know from economic research and we know from what happened after the last recession that the longer people are out of work, just the worse their job prospects are. They have these big gaps in their resume. It becomes harder to get them back into jobs. So we've continued to see that number of long-term unemployed creep back up. And so I think that is an important number that speaks to the sort of where we are in, you know, even though we've seen a lot of jobs come back, this really shows that there's clearly a lot of people who are still in trouble here.
Kate Davidson, always great to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And finally, pandemic purchases went beyond baking flour and exercise equipment in 2020. Life insurance policies are also on the list. Applications for policies among those under 45 jumped by 4%, the highest year-on-year growth since 2001. The Journal's Leslie Sism has more.
Insurance experts say this is mostly because younger people, those 45 and under, have come face to face with the issue of mortality. There's so much in the news about deaths from COVID-19 that they've been thinking more about, my goodness, what would happen if, you know, someone in this family died, the mother or the father. So many more young people are seeking out life insurance policies, simple life insurance policies, what's called term life, to buy coverage with a death benefit that will kick in if the insured person dies during the period of the policy.
For more on the business of life insurance policies, you can visit WSJ.com or the Journal app. And that's what's news for Thursday. We're back tonight with a new show. If you like us, let us know with a rating and review from wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.